the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program, available as always on iTunes and at nfl.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K, Sheck, Sheck, Sheck.
Yes, week 9, NFL, in the books now. I don't know how to feel about it. Yeah, listen, I have for the entirety of my life rooted for one team named the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't know if I can move forward, though. I have my dignity to consider, after all. 55 points at the hands of Tom Brady. No, of course, I'll stand by the black and gold, but that was a sickening, sickening deed that I witnessed from Foxborough. Here to help us break that down and some other sickening stuff, real-world sickening stuff, from NFL Network and from all sorts of other things, from NFL.com. He is the go-to personnel guru, and in fact, he's going to be up there in Palo Alto this weekend to watch the Oregon, or on Thursday night to watch the Oregon Ducks and Stanford Cardinal hookup. He's at Move the Sticks. It's Daniel Jeremiah. What's the poop, fella?
Dave, I was thinking about you watching that Steelers game, and I had a feeling we'd be talking about it today.
Well, it didn't make me feel happy on the inside, I'll tell you that much. But I saw it coming. At the very least, I will say, I warned everybody who was trying to. A lot of people in Pittsburgh were talking about, hey, if the Steelers win this one, they're still in the playoff mix. They had no chance against Tom Brady. Tom Brady owns them and has owned them for more than a decade now. We'll get into that maybe a little bit. There's really nothing to talk about. This is an atrocious football team. And if misery loves company, at least they're not alone, because the Atlanta Falcons and Houston Texans, they're also down and out, the Giants and so on. But no team is going through more troubled times than the Miami Dolphins right now. Yeah, I know they're 4-4 on the field, but off the field, that's where the ugliness is. Let's talk about it with their biggest fan all the way from London, England. It's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank, he's Handsome Hank, he's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Dave.
Are you?
I am. It's amazing. In a week where the Dolphins won, they've made it feel like they lost in an enormous way.
Well, should we jump into it, fellas? Should we have a serious-minded conversation about this horrible stuff? I don't know what there is to say except that, and I know it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but it's what really makes the thing even murkier in my book is Richie Incognito, shameful language, shameful everything towards Jonathan Martin, his teammate. Riley Cooper of the Eagles, of course, in the summer did something similar, but it's not the same thing. This was on tape to a group of people. This wasn't directed at a teammate with whom you obviously have to be together, have to have togetherness and team and all that kind of stuff. But still, I wonder now, the Dolphins kick Incognito to the curb. The Eagles retain Cooper. They don't suspend him or anything. And then he catches 3 touchdowns on Sunday. And so, obviously, I doubt very many people in the Eagles organization are now saying, boy, we really should have gotten rid of that Cooper, else their season would be over right now. Jeremiah, Talk about this. Which organization do you feel like, broad strokes, handled the respective situations better?
Well, it's totally different when you talk about the two guys. Riley Cooper did not have the track record that Richie Incognito had. Riley Cooper, as you said, it was not with a teammate. And then also the contrition that Riley Cooper showed, you know, immediately after this thing came out, apologizing to all the teammates, admitting he had a problem, versus Richie Incognito putting every reporter on Twitter blast, you know, wanted to clear his name and was very, very defensive through this whole process. So I think there's a lot of differences. I do think that, you know, from the start, probably the Miami Dolphins wish they could handle things maybe a little bit differently in terms of having to issue all these statements throughout the process instead of just waiting, getting all as much information as they could, and then maybe dealing with it from that standpoint. But look, the long term, I think they probably do move on from Richie Incognito, and I don't think Richie Incognito is a good enough player where somebody else is gonna bring him into their situation. That's where the Eagles did Riley Cooper a huge favor, because it would have been tough. It would have been a PR issue for somebody to bring Riley Cooper in after that. And now he's had a chance to kind of rehabilitate his image. He's playing well. Now, after the season, if Riley Cooper to walk in free agency, I don't think there'll be that much attention on wherever he would land.
Handsome, your thoughts as a Dolphins fan?
Apart from the use of the racial slur, I don't really see an awful lot of overlap between those two incidents. I think they're pretty different.
True enough. It's not fair for me to really think
that what I take from this is that it seems like a lot of this, even now when we're looking at it, and this is Monday afternoon, and this story seems to be, you know, every hour there's something new that comes out here. But as we talk now, I think what's missing in a lot of it is context. Like, I have a feeling that, you know, locker room banter, and I'm certainly not minimizing any of what's happened here, but locker room banter, I think there, to some extent, what Incognito said when it was whatever day, Saturday, where he was saying, I don't know what they're talking about, it could have been construed is that this is what happens in our locker room, and he didn't at that time see what the issue was. Now, clearly, he'd overstepped his bounds by quite some considerable measure, but it might just be that he didn't know that that was the case. I mean, and I'm not defending him by any shot, but it doesn't seem like something that's completely out of character in NFL locker rooms generally, or anywhere where there's a large male contingent hanging out and spending a lot of time together.
It seems to me, I think the easiest analogy is it sounds like a fraternity hazing thing, you know, that they're really abusive in some. If you ever were on a college campus for any amount of time, yeah, you're aware that there are some fraternities that have this notorious reputation for being abusive to the young guys in it and everything. But DJ, in an NFL, you were a scout for the Ravens and for the Browns and for the Eagles. Were you aware of these kind of how culpable would you say from the outside? Would you say? I know it's a tough spot to put you in. Are the Dolphins? How would you know about this? How could you know about such things?
In terms of the financial stuff, that goes on everywhere. In terms of making the rookies pay for dinners and different things like that. I mean, I think that goes back to, you remember Ryan Leaf, Junior Seau, I believe, stole his credit card and took everybody out for a big meal there. So that's been going on forever in terms of the financial hazing, if you want to call it that, rookies being forced to pay for stuff. I wasn't in the locker room. I didn't play. So I can't really speak to how normal that type of dialogue was. I played college football and even in a college locker room, you can get away with stuff inside the locker room. You can't get away with outside the locker room. But I was never around a situation where it was, you know, any kind of racial issue popped up like we have here. That
Appalachian State didn't have heated hazing rituals?
No. You know what? You shave the freshmen's heads. That's about it.
Yeah. Tame by comparison. Yeah.
I mean, to extend your analogy, it sounds like one of the frat dudes has got a little out of hand and has taken it further than is probably normal. But I guess that's a fairly young team. There aren't a lot of leaders on that Dolphins team, which is one of the issues that we're seeing here. And because he was seen as, I think, immediately after Jake Long left the Dolphins, he was kind of seen as that locker room leader. And by the way, treated by the team as a locker room leader as well. Maybe that's why he was able to run amok and get away with some of this stuff up until now.
DJ, I want to turn the page because we...
Thank you. Let's move on.
It's not fun to talk about at all. It's grim. And ultimately, what are we going to resolve right now? Because time is short for you, because you're hitting the road, you're going to run up to see the big Pac-12 showdown. I'm going to open up week 9 of the NFL season to you. Talk about whatever you please, what struck your fancy. But before you do, I have to hail you because we did the inaugural version, the first ever version, last Friday. We taped something called, it was me, it was you, it was Adam Rank, who I hope will join us momentarily, and Akbar Bajabiamila. It was the NFL.com weekend guide. Look for it on NFL.com coming up later this week. And one of the things we did was give us a Monday headline. Yours was, Brady's back, Brady's going to torch the Steelers. You hit the nail on the head. In fact, on NFL.com, the headline was, Brady's back. My question is... Did you write it off of seeing it, though, Handsome? Was it cooked?
There was no collusion between cousins here.
See, thank you. I feel like my name's been cleared here.
Right.
Thank you.
All right, DJ, then. What strikes your fancy here? Well, is it the Chiefs, who no one respects even though they're 9-0, which I find ludicrous? What is 7 touchdown passes from a guy who looked atrocious a fortnight ago?
Well, I'm just going to go through a couple things here. The Chiefs win. Look, at the end of the day, you can talk about, oh, this quarterback wasn't good or that quarterback. They haven't played anybody. We saw in the Seattle game against Tampa Bay, you still got to show up and you still got to get the job done. And the Chiefs have done that 9 straight weeks, so give them their credit. Romo, it'll be a back page story because he made the plays at the end of that game. We won't hear much about it unless you go talk to Elliot downstairs. You'll hear plenty about it. That to me is a great story.
The president of the California chapter of the Romo Apologists.
Yeah, I threw some chum out yesterday, I think it's called, on Twitter.
Oh, boy.
When he threw that fourth quarter interception.
I threw it in advance of that. I said, five minutes left.
And predictably, Elliot the Shark came and ate and took the bait.
I said in advance of the interception with 5.5 left, I said, well, listen, this is perfect situation. This should be a gimme for your man who has the best fourth quarter blah-bitty-blah stat that Elliot Harrison loves to throw out all the time. I said 5.5 down against the 30th ranked pass defense in the NFL. A gimme for your boy Romo, and then he immediately threw that pick.
But give him credit because he came back and made the plays at the end. So the Cowboys win. That was interesting to me, though. The story that I thought is kind of the most fascinating. Again, haven't played a lot of great teams lately. Let me rattle off the last four games. The scores for the Carolina Panthers: 35-10. 30-15, 31-13, 34-10. I mean, that's against Minnesota, St. Louis, Tampa, and Atlanta. Okay, not good teams, but they are steamrolling them. We talk about Seattle escaping a game, Dallas escaping a game, all these close games. They are blowing the doors off everybody they play. I think that's a team you got to keep your eye on right now.
Especially as a team that might get hot in December, and we've seen how those sort of wild card teams get hot in December and then scorching in January and maybe even February.
I think, you know, you always hear that cliche about what have you done for the NFLs or what have you done for me lately, league. I find it remarkable how quickly we can't see the forest for the trees. Yes, you point out Carolina smoked the team that's lousy. They smoked the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
And when nobody bats an eye, they destroy it. Forget,
team's a shell. It's just a
shell.
Forget itself.
August, though. If I would have said to you 5 weeks ago, knowing nothing about anything, what's your pick for that last game the first Sunday in November between those two teams? What do you think the final score of that's going to be? No one would pick Carolina to win that game.
No.
Amazing.
No, shoot. I had, before the season started, I had Patriots Falcons in the Super Bowl. So, man, you talk about missing on one.
Well, and we also are going to be doing apologies on the next weekend guide, you know, for the video. I think I have to apologize to Rex Ryan. I predicted he was doomed, as did most of the world. I thought he'd be coaching at
Oakland. I want to say on one of our Thursday night deals, you were talking about which team Rex Ryan would be a defensive coordinator for next year.
I think I said he was a head coach of the Raiders. Either way, I apologize.
Okay,
when I'm wrong, I say
maybe
I'm wrong.
I could have been wrong. And my apology, you talk about apologies, mine would be to Rob Ryan, although they didn't get the job done against the Jets, gave up a lot of yards on the ground. He has done a great job with that defense. I've been critical in the past. Rob Ryan, my apologies.
All right, here comes Rank. DJ, you're going to go, so we'll stop down. Last question, though, DJ.
Yep.
Who's going to get that AFC wild card? We know the Broncos or Chiefs is going to get one of them. Who's going to get the other one?
You know, I know they just totally blew a game, and they have a tough schedule down the stretch.
I know what you're going to say.
But I think I like San Diego.
Oh, I thought, you know what, until you said tough schedule coming down, you know who it's going to be? I fear the Baltimore Ravens. If they beat the Bengals this week,
they don't look right.
Atrocious.
The only team in the league averaging less than 3 yards of carry on
Dolphins, Jets, the Titans are right there. They have the tiebreaker against the Jets.
I like the Chargers. I think the Chargers at home could do it.
Although, only thing is, you got two with the Chiefs, two with the Broncos. They're going to have to find a way to split those games.
But. All right. There goes DJ.
Boys, it's been good.
Here comes Adam Ray. Adam Ray is here. Both that drunk on beer. He likes fries, fries, fries. Fries, fries, fries. With gravy. There he is. I don't know the last time he had a French fry. It's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me. I want to say, really, thank you. I was getting a little bit worried because usually our trusty, and I use air quotes there for those who can't see me, which is pretty much everybody, our trusty producer didn't let me know that the show was starting. I come walking in, and the show's already going on. Like, oh, okay.
Well,
thanks.
How do you think I feel? He sends me and Jeremiah a text message, hey, we're going to start it up at 3 o'clock. And then he and I sat up here until 3:30, and then Black Tie showed up. Black Tie, where were you? You're doing your more important podcast, The Coach's Show, right?
Yes, I was producing a Coach's Show podcast with Jason Garrett, the Cowboys head coach, came in doing an interview.
That went
a little bit long, guys, so I can't be in two places at once. I'm sorry.
Well, Jason Garrett has a pretty big name. Who'd you get for us today?
DJ?
Dez Bryant?
Oh,
Romo
geez.
Would be cool.
I got DJ.
Why? How is it possible?
Get DJ turns up here to go to work, and
I asked him to come up for the podcast.
No, I mean he turns up in the podcast studio to work.
I opened the door for him.
Where's Akbar? Could we land that elusive name?
How about Nick Foles? Did you chase him? That would have been a great one. He threw seven touchdown passes.
Or even Nick Folk. We're not fussy.
Four full field goals, yes. All right, which Nick should we talk about first, Rank, since you missed out on the early part? You missed the delightful, mirth-filled conversation about Richie Incognito. You choose the game you want to kibitz about here for week nine.
Now I understand why I wasn't invited.
Probably, you can't be trusted. Probably, serious-minded thing.
Probably for the best.
The grown-ups are talking. Please, Adam.
I understand. I do want to talk a little bit about Nick Foles, and I'm disappointed that he didn't get an opportunity to go for eight touchdown passes. It would have been, as you like to say, all the people who are too high and mighty who would have been. How dare he try to run up the score against the Raiders?
I don't think about that, but
I understand. But it's the Raiders. You should run up the score. Nobody's really going to get too upset if you try to, you know, pour it onto the Raiders. And why not? They scored no points in the fourth quarter. Why not a couple of shots, see what happens? And you will
notice. How about give them a series? Say, hey, Nick, listen, you've been hurt. We've had trouble being consistent at quarterback because of injuries. I'm not going to just leave you out there for the whole fourth quarter. But this is a chance at history. You could break Peyton Manning's record, among others. I'm going to put you out there, kid. Go get it. One series is your shot. No, he doesn't let him do it.
No, that's pretty. And, you know, I did like that Nick Foles, on one of his touchdowns to, I believe it was Riley Cooper, it looked like he could have scrambled and maybe given it a go to kind of run one in. But he was like, no, first, I'm going to throw this one, which is smart because, you know what, that fascist, that Christian Ponder, ran one in himself against the Dallas Cowboys, which deprived fantasy owners of an Adrian Peterson run or anything like that. He spread it around.
What about Christian Ponder owners? Yeah, we could get into that fascism, but Christian Ponder owners were delighted with that touchdown.
All four of them were ecstatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Yeah, I don't think there are a whole lot of Vikings outside of Adrian Peterson on anybody's fantasy roster, right?
No, but or maybe Kyle Rudolph or somebody, but at least, you know what, he did the right thing. He kept trying to get that record, and it shows how silly it was. And I know this was probably like Archie Manning's doing. Like, he probably made a call during the third quarter, like, there's no way.
Hey, Commissioner Goodell, it doesn't happen. It just ain't going to happen. Peyton's work hard for that record. You ain't going to take it right for this Nick whatever his name is.
That would have been so great, though. I would have been thrilled to see that.
You know what I discovered? I like kind of a slightly inaccurate stat, so I've got one for you here. I stumbled upon this one yesterday afternoon. It took 44 years. Joe Capp. Until Peyton Manning did this in week one, it was 44 years since someone threw seven touchdowns. And then Nick Foles does it 8 weeks later. I like the timing of those, like the magnificent seven, they're called, throwing seven touchdowns. Is like it only happens every 44 years, apart from 8 weeks later, a guy called Nick Foles manages to do it.
Yeah, it's the football equivalent of Brady Anderson of the Orioles hitting 50 home runs.
Exactly.
It's like, all right, that's officially over. It's no longer a number of significance if Brady Anderson is doing it from center field for the O's. Yeah.
One of our fantasy editors, Marcus Grant, I think, had the best analogy of this on Sunday. He harkened back to the College World Series game a couple of years ago where it was USC versus Arizona State, and the two teams combined for about 35 runs in a national championship baseball game, which is when they said, you know what, enough with the metal bats. We're gonna deaden them now. We're going to try to make it more realistic, have the metal bats hit more like wood, because we just can't have basically a slow pitch softball game. So this is probably going to be the point in time where they're like, you know what, the rules are a little too liberal for the offense. Maybe we should tighten them up a little bit. Let the defenders play a little bit more, because we can't have Nick Foles going out and throwing seven touchdown passes like it's an Arena League game.
By the way, the craziest stat of the day in my book is the time of possession from that game. Did you get a load of that? The Raiders, if you see a team wins 49 to 20, that you would assume, obviously, the Eagles dominated the football. Instead, the Raiders had it for 38 minutes of the game. Is that amazing? I know that's Oregon Ducks stuff, but
that's typical.
That's a stunning number, eh?
But that's typical of Chip Kelly's offense, is that if you look back at his time at Oregon, they always lost the time of possession.
All right, let's bounce around a little bit here. The Cowboys pull it out. I was sure that Romo had thrown another one away. Feeble attempts by the Romo apologists to get under my skin after the game with the, well, does that one count?
Sure.
Oh, you were saying, Dave?
Yeah, I got the same thing.
I was saying your guy threw an interception against the 30th-ranked defense with 5 minutes left. There was no guarantee he was getting the ball back with a chance to win the game at that point. You turned it over on your side of the field.
You look pretty stupid now, don't you? No, I don't.
What's funny is they have those tweets already queued up, and they're just waiting to send them, and then Romo throws the interception. They're like, oh, man, I don't know what to do with this one now.
So what do we think now at this point after 9 weeks? Who's going to win that bum division? Because I don't jive. You know I don't like jive talk. The Redskins are actually in a better spot than they were last year. Last year they were 3-6 before they started their push. Now they're 3-5. The Giants, let's say they're done already, even though they're not really in that terrible division. Who's going to win it, Rank?
Man, I hate to write off the Giants so quickly.
It would be funny if they won the division.
They're going to.
They have to overcome three teams. That's hard to do.
But Andre Brown's going to be coming back. That's going to stabilize their running attack.
Don't get too excited about that. People, when there's a lack of anything at a position, you think, oh, the great panacea is going to be the guy returning. Just keep in mind, it's Andre Brown.
10 touchdowns in 10 games last year.
All right. It's not Joe Morris or Otis Anderson. It's Andre Brown. But he's not going to revolutionize that offense.
Yeah, they have Peyton Hillis there right now. Andre Brown might as well be Joe Morris then.
I think they're about the same is the point.
Peyton Hillis, you think
Peyton Hillis is that much worse than the immortal Andre Brown?
He was good last year when he came in and played, he filled in.
Who's going to win the division, I say to you?
I'm going to say... Oh, I hate it. I'm gonna say Giants. I really believe it. I can't stop myself from picking them.
All right, be a voice of reason, handsome.
I'm gonna say the Cowboys. I've just pulled up their schedule here. So they got a tough game against the Saints coming up next week.
That's a loss.
Then they've got to go at the Giants, which is a tough one for them.
If the Giants win next week, it's of importance to them, right?
Exactly. Then they've got the Raiders on Thanksgiving. I mean, I think that one...
I've forgotten to check. That's one of my annual traditions, and I have forgotten to look at it recently to see how relevant the Thanksgiving games are going to be this year.
Well, let's do that. Go ahead. That'll be great. Then they're at the Bears. That could be a tough one, but maybe not. Then they got the Packers, at the Redskins, and the Eagles to finish off. That's no cakewalk, right?
No, indeed. The Eagles, in fact, maybe that game will settle the division is that final game of the season.
I think it'll come down to those two teams, and I think you're right. I think that the division will still be alive in that last week.
What about the Redskins, handsome? Do you think they can get into it? I mean, they're into it at this point.
They're into it. My problem with the Redskins, every time I see their defense, I just think, whoa, that doesn't scare me at any position. There isn't someone there that makes me think, wow, that's a defense that strikes any fear into me.
And the Chargers play calling, when they had that opportunity at the goal line and they ran a couple of pass plays, was just miserable. Like, that was just a poor showing.
I find it detestable. By the way, I have it pulled up right here, the Thanksgiving trio of games. We know it concludes with the now completely meaningless Steelers at Baltimore game, unless the Ravens, unless they beat the Bengals. That game has zero significance for either team. The day starts Green Bay at Detroit. That's a dandy.
That's going to be a great game.
I might have to get up early for that one.
And then Raiders at Dallas is pretty crummy.
But the good thing, that Steelers-Ravens one, you'll be digesting food. I mean, the problem will be if someone's moved the remote control more than like 3 feet away from you, you're going to have to watch it.
It's true. I won't be in Pittsburgh, and it is a great holiday tradition when I travel to the banks of the Three Rivers to take in a game, as I did throughout my childhood with my old man and my uncles and my sister and everybody gathered around the TV. I think the most shameful thing of all is that the Steelers are so bad this year that we might legitimately as a family not watch the Steeler game on Thanksgiving night if we were all together. I'm glad I'm not there to see it. Who would want to watch that? They gave up 55 points. Don't get me angry. I want to finish up. Oh, no, you were making a point, right? Go ahead. What, do you remember where you were on the Redskins? Because I have a point about the Redskins, too.
No, the Chargers play calling was pretty terrible.
Agreed.
It's a Ken Wisenhunt near the goal line. I just don't trust him.
They have 1 foot to go for a touchdown, and they decide to boot out the – I mean, he's slower. Philip Rivers is slower than I am. They run a fade to Antonio Gates in the corner of the end zone. Then they roll Phil Rivers out on third down with the game on the line.
He's Bledsoe-esque at this stage of his career.
Yeah, he doesn't move very well, but you can't hammer it in with Ryan Matthews or at least try to or –
I mean, that's Danny it. Two Woodhead. In a row. That's it. That's my play call, and that's not old school or anything like that.
You got the two timeouts. You know what? Take your two running attempts, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Philip Rivers is like 6'5". He can't do the thing where he leaps over.
Here's the
pile.
Other thing. Here, well, a couple of things. First of all, if I'm the Chargers, I legitimately go for it in that spot. I don't kick the field goal to force an overtime. What's more likely, that you're going to win a coin flip and you're going to score a touchdown, or that you're going to both have a possession, then kick a field goal to win the game? What odds? What are the percentages on that? I really would like to know that. It can't be as likely as you going 1 foot forward with the game on the line. You've had if you have three cracks at it, if before on when after the play, which was a questionable play against Woodhead, when you have three plays left to go at it there,
right?
And you. If you're Mike McCoy, I just think you just say to the offensive coordinator and to Philip Rivers and everybody else, we're going for it. We're going for this. I want to run straight ahead three straight times or shame the devil. And if you don't run, or at least you play action into the middle of the line, because as was proven again for the millionth time, 999,000 of the times that they've ever run play action at the on fourth and inches in a short yardage situation, play action into the line, rolling the QB and pitching it over to the tight end or to a streaking wide receiver works 100% or 99.9% of the time. Why no one does that? Instead, run a fade pattern to Antonio Gates. That's your best option there.
Were they going to him or Keenan Allen?
Oh, is that who? I thought it was
Gates.
Might
have been Keenan Allen.
I think it was Gates in the right corner.
Oh, you're
right. On third down
Then that makes it worse. That's right. You're right.
And it was a long way away from Antonio Gates as well.
Hey, Black Tie, how come behind the glass? Why are you shaking your head at that?
The NFL game is not played in Studio 66.
A coach can't go for that. A coach cannot go for fourth down.
Yes, he can.
You got to go for the tie. If you go for it and you don't make it,
then
Hank, you know the headline game. You're chastised the next day. Like, you're absolutely just poured upon. You can't. You have to.
I don't agree
it.
With that. I know what you're that. Getting at. If you make questionable decisions, again, I think you have math on your side. You would say, listen,
you do. But
anybody who criticizes you, you
away,
say this
from a foot away.
We felt this was a more likely thing for us than the series of events that needs to go our way in order for us to win this
on
game.
The road.
Can you guys
especially
ever recall?
Road,
right. Can you guys then, ever recall a team in an NFL doing that?
Like, Chiefs. The Chiefs did it. The Chiefs did it with Larry Johnson about 7 or 8 years ago on fourth and goal as time expired. It was the last play of the game. Also,
didn't the Chargers
lose? They have taken a field goal for the win though?
I think they could have forced.
I mean,
overtime.
A field goal for overtime.
I think they could have kicked the field goal. Also, Doug Flutie, I remember running a bootleg once on as time expired, and I think they could have kicked the field goal for the win there too.
And didn't the Chargers lose the headline game already by their questionable play calling as it was? Like, they were already scrutinized for those plays for trying to pass the ball when they had the timeouts, and so now. If he goes for it, and it's look at the change in philosophy it's made in Carolina, where Mike Silver is now referring to Ron Rivera as Riverboat Ron because he's a gambler. He's just, as they say, thrown caution to the wind, and he does crazy things like going for it on fourth down. It's not like Mike Smith against the Saints a couple of years ago where he went for it on fourth and one from his own 25, or even Bill Belichick.
Yeah, that's bad numbers. The numbers aren't in your favor there.
Yeah,
I imagine they are.
He's at the goal line. He's
Let me tell you something else about that game that jumped out to me. At the end of the third quarter, I think it was the last play of the third quarter, Keenan Allen is running wide open over the middle, about 15 yards downfield, right over the middle there in that open space. And it occurred, and he dropped it. Good ball from Phil Rivers. Keenan Allen would have turned upfield and run another 15, 20 minimum if you see the all-22 camera shot. He had a lot of room to turn it upfield. But he drops it, And it's because he's looking over his shoulder, and there was a Redskin charging hard. He couldn't see him, but he sensed that he was coming. It was not Brandon Merriweather, by the way. But I thought to myself, whether anybody likes it or not, that is having an effect on the game. I know it's a bad thing. It's taboo that Brandon Merriweather's the worst guy in the NFL outside of possibly Richie Incognito right now. But the fact is that that was in Keenan Allen's head that he was about to take a belt. And so mission accomplished, really, for Merriweather, that Allen was looking over his shoulder at that. And then it also occurred to me, you know, when people talk, you talk about 7 touchdown passes right now. If they don't do anything, if the NFL just stands pat with the rules as they are, here's a hypothesis for you. The offenses will become even more dominant because players, just as we say, defensive players they don't know yet how to play the new version of the game. They don't know how to hit the guy. They're struggling with not putting their head down, and do they hit the knees and the headshots and all that. So a lot of the defensive guys are having a tough time getting up to speed. The offensive players, though, are accustomed to, if I catch a ball at full speed with my head turned around over the middle, I'm going to take a shot for doing it. And so they still have the dropsies out of nerves. Once, if you're 12 now and you never experience that, then you'll just run free and you won't ever look over your shoulder. Ergo, the receivers will be even more productive in 10 years. You savvy what I'm saying?
I get you.
There will be no fear factor because they'll never have experienced any need to be afraid of running.
The conditioning, the mental conditioning.
True,
won't be there. I like it. I think that's a nice hypothesis.
You're spot on.
I look forward to us sitting down in 12 years' time from now.
And discussing this.
Talking about Jean-Claude Van Damme dominating the college ranks.
What you did is you queued me up for something I've wanted to rant about for a little while, which is that it's just generally tackling in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I get it. Like, everyone wants to make that big hit, although big hits have now been made pretty much illegal. But why is it so difficult for NFL to, like, these guys, you know, if you're a defensive player in the NFL, your sole job is really, like, if there's a guy with the ball, stop him from getting any more yards, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you boil it down to its absolute most basic point, that's what you're trying to get done. Why is it so difficult for these guys to understand that if they put their arms around someone's legs, they won't be able to run anymore? But if you just bump into someone, they may, because they're also big in physics, and I don't understand the physics exactly because I wasn't listening during science for most of my education, but if you bump into someone and they're the same size as you, they'll probably just bump off and you'll both bump in different directions, but they will still be able to actually run forward.
It is I don't know if you're using technical football terms there, bump into me, but yes, I agree with you. I mean, the way they throw their shoulder at the general area, basically around the thigh area, with the assumption that's not going
to... But if you can do that, if you're in a position to be able to do that, you can also put your arms around the guy's legs, and then maybe he will still break your tackle, but you will have slowed him down, and you luckily have 10 other guys who are on your team who will also be able to stop him.
Black tie, that is a great reason to get Darren Sharper. If we could get the great Darren Sharper on the cast at some point
He's on the coach's show today.
Oh, darn. All right. Well, maybe next year. I'd like to know from Sharper or another DB, because that's where you see it. It's not linebackers.
These days as well, it's linebackers. You say it a lot.
Yeah, guys, I do agree with you. But is that a safety thing? If you go at a guy, you catch a knee in the side of the head and then you get concussed? I wonder if that's if that's coached, because there's no way you look at the game film and with the coach looking on, you would think that a generation ago they would say, "What are you doing, man? Wrap him up! You can't just throw your body in his general direction." But they all do it, so there's a reason.
But, I mean, how many times do you, like, on a weekend, it drives me crazy. I sit there screaming at the TV, thinking, like, oh, you could have, there are, like, 12 more yards that a guy got there.
I'm telling you, it's all about, that doesn't answer that, your issue. Like I say, I mean, it's all about, the Steelers are playing another game than a lot of other, than more successful NFL teams are, which is, and we identified this in the offseason, I think last year even. Mm-hmm. It's about taking the ball away. That's all it is. You got to make plays. Tavon Austin is the reason that St. Louis fell all over themselves to get him is because he's a so-called playmaker.
And that's, chunk yardage.
Yes. This is what you need. You need the guys because you need four or five of those a game, and those are the difference in an otherwise stalemate of a contest. So it's all about takeaways. The Steelers, statistically, well, now they're really starting to drop down, especially against the run. But in total numbers, you would think, oh, the Steelers are, you know, they're a pretty good defense. But they'd never take the ball away. Meantime, teams like New England do take the ball away, and that's why they're successful. You know what I'm saying, Rank?
I'm with you.
Oh, we've had that conversation many times before. What else, Rank? I bellyached before you jumped in here. I'm tired already. The Chiefs are 9-0. Why is no one impressed with them? They're 9-0, period. What else is there to say?
It's true, yeah.
Do you bellyache? Are you kind of are you blasé about this team?
I heard a little bit of what you were talking about with Daniel Jeremiah, and you said when you were talking about that sixth playoff spot.
Oh, yes.
Were you saying that the Chiefs have that other one locked up? Or?
Oh, yeah. It's in the bag.
One for the Chiefs. So,
or the Broncos. One of those
well,
two
no,
has
but,
it.
But you already assumed that the Broncos were going to win the AFC West. I feel that you are dismissive enough as
no,
in, like,
no.
You're
no.
saying
oh,
that the
no,
Chiefs...
I was saying either way. I was not. You read into that. Either way, I don't. One of those two is going to be the wild card. That's all.
You just... The thing... I go back and forth with Alex Smith because on one hand, he doesn't... throw the big throws. You know, like Daniel was talking about a couple of weeks ago where Joe Flacco is that playoff quarterback with the big arm. When you need a big play, he's somebody who can step up and make it where guys like Matt Schaub can't do it. And I wonder if Alex Smith is going to be able to do it. But then you think about San Francisco, and had Kyle Williams been able to field a punt, he would have had the 49ers in the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
So
he's made the big throws in playoff games.
That's just highly presumptuous that they would have made it to the Super Bowl if he catches that punt.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
He still needs to make plays after that for them to actually win the game.
I know. It's insane to think that they would have won that game had they not turned the ball over.
If that, no,
you're assuming they would have scored on that next drive.
Did you not see the throw he made?
No. You're thinking of the overtime black tie earlier in the game.
The first one. Remember, there were two of them.
The first one is, and they immediately, Eli immediately turns that into 6 points when they otherwise could not move the ball against that Niners defense.
Got it, guys.
You don't need to keep talking because black ties just cut this bit out of the show.
No, no, that's fine. I mean, hey, I was thinking about regulation. But it's so funny how people always bring that up, but all of a sudden everyone forgets about Peyton Manning and what Raheem Moore did. It's like, okay, if you want to keep making that argument, that's just – hey, I didn't mean to interrupt, but the last legitimate quarterback –
you still did.
The last legitimate quarterback the Chiefs played this season was Tony Romo in week two. Since then, they played Michael Vick in week three, Eli Manning in week four.
Two-time Super Bowl
MVP.
How are
those two guys not legit quarterbacks?
Eli Manning this season is legit quarterback.
Two-time Super Bowl MVP.
Based on this season, okay? Ryan Fitzpatrick, week five. Terrell, I believe they played Terrell Pryor in week six, or was that the week that Matt Flynn played? It might have been the week Matt Flynn played. And then Case Keenum, who I love, by the way, great buddy language. It was his first start in week seven. Jason Campbell in week eight. And then Jeff Tool, for crying out loud. These guys have had such an easy schedule. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate on this for, you know,
I think at least half of football fans agree with you. That's why I can't believe it. I think everybody – I understand that they haven't obliterated teams through the first half of the season, but their defense is dominating. And the fact of the matter is,
they're running back in football right now.
They're 9-0. I mean, how particular can we be about what we expect? That you can't 9-0.
That's all good and dandy
in a good division, right?
Running back, good defense, so good and dandy. But the last five quarterbacks to win the Super Bowl, you have to have big playability. Maybe you're not elite, but you have to have big playability, which is what Flacco had, which is what Eli Manning had. Those guys. Their highs can be pretty high. Alex Smith doesn't have that. He doesn't have that big playability, and that's why people don't really care.
I don't think Alex Smith has any big play receivers either. I think that might be, you know, like you could point the finger at Alex Smith and say, hey, you don't have big playability. Where's the guy to make the big play too?
Yeah, Dwayne Bowe, I know I've talked to enough people with the Chiefs who say, like, Dwayne Bowe is really not a legit number one, but we felt hamstrung. We had to bring him back. We do not regard him as being a peer of the top number one wide receivers.
And it's disingenuous to dismiss Alex Smith not making a big play because that throw that he made to Vernon Davis against the Saints – I know.
That's how you know Alex Smith doesn't make big plays. When you say that one throw, and you exactly know what you're talking about.
How many times has he been in the playoffs? He was in two playoff games.
We're just being too nice to Alex Smith right
now. I completely disagree with you.
Oh, my gosh. It's like, except for the big plays that he's made, this guy's made
except
no big plays.
Except for the two big plays that he's made. You're making my point.
How many playoff games was he in with that San Francisco team for so many years?
Hey, he did essentially beat the Giants in that title game. And so he would have gotten to the Super Bowl. And really, how can we know that they wouldn't have won that Super Bowl against the Patriots when the Giants beat them? And for that matter, if Colin Kaepernick doesn't take over for him last year, I know people like to say, oh, listen, he could only get at the ceiling. Jim Harbaugh knew it. You should know it, too, that he could only take him so far. Kaepernick took him to another level. But listen, nobody can say definitively that Alex Smith maybe doesn't have a ring on his finger and is still the starting man if they just stick with him.
In today's NFL, you got to have big playability to win. You went from Drew Brees to Aaron Rodgers.
I kind of agree after what I just said 10 minutes ago. But
you just have to. That's the name of the game today.
All right. Who is, before we wrap it up here, real quick, fellas, who is the best team in the AFC now? Handsome.
I think it's the Denver Broncos. I think it still is the Denver Broncos. And when the Chiefs and Broncos play in a couple weeks' time, I think we'll see that on the field.
All right. But, well, we also have a showdown coming up against the Patriots. That to me, now that you have Gronkowski, and listen, you will get an inflated sense of how good the Patriots are if you watch them play the Steelers anytime, because they always smoke them, as I say. But that being said, Gronkowski now back. He is the best tight end in the AFC, at least. I still love Jimmy Graham, but now you have Danny Amendola and you have Stephen Ridley and everything else.
Shane Vereen is coming back
after week 11.
They're all, but again, their defense looked lousy against a mediocre Steelers offense. Rank, how say you?
I'm going to go with the Patriots.
They were the best
team in the AFC.
They were my preseason pick to go to the Super Bowl. I'm not going to get off the bandwagon now that they're 6-2.
You actually believe they're the best team in the AFC.
Excuse me, 7-2. Yes. Who's better than them? Seriously.
I think – I'll tell you who'd beat them? It's the Chiefs.
A better
the
playoff
Chiefs would
team?
would beat the Patriots, and the Broncos will beat the Chiefs and the Patriots.
No.
The best thing that the Patriots have going for them, we're going to see this in the next few weeks. We're going to see it all happen. The Patriots are
As Black Tie said, you need quarterbacks who can make big-time plays. The Broncos don't have that. They don't have a playmaker.
Let me say something.
You talk about Alex Smith's big plays. Where's Peyton Manning's big play in the playoffs where you're like, remember that one game where he bailed him out? Wow. Or can you remember all of his playoff failures?
That kind of is one of my favorite things. But I don't want to be a broken record, but I do agree with you about that. That is the most damning thing of all about him, is that he never...
I agree with you, but let's not have this conversation.
I'm not going to. We have this conversation at DDFT 198. I don't want to have it. I just want to say that I agree with Rank for the record, that is a nuanced point that he's making, more than he just chokes it away every January. He also, what is the signature playoff moment of Peyton Manning's career? The comeback against the Patriots in the Dome, I suppose, is the answer to that. Real quick, here's the Chiefs' remaining schedule. At Denver, and then at home against Denver, and sandwiched in between there, the Chargers. That is rugged. Then they go at DC, at the Raiders, then they go home against the Colts, and then at San Diego. That is brutal. Outside of the Raiders,
schedule.
Who's the gimme? And that's at Oakland, so you're traveling across the country at least to play that. That's a pretty rugged
schedule.
They'll
be road tested when they reach the playoffs.
They're getting to the playoffs, but the point is they're going to be the road team. As I think about it, Rank, the Broncos almost can't help but do it. But wait, now let's just look, because you play the same teams in the schedule. At San Diego again,
and quickly on at San Diego. Let's not forget Mike McCoy is the head coach of the Chargers, and no one knows Peyton better than that. You could see the Broncos looking ahead, knowing that they've got the Chiefs coming to Denver in 2 weeks' time. I wouldn't be surprised if the Broncos have a little hiccup in San Diego.
Well, I mean, you talk about tough roads. They go at San Diego, home with KC, at New England, at KC. Home with Tennessee, which they should win, but Tennessee is not a jive team. Then home with San Diego, at Houston, at Oakland. So if they can get to that, if they can get through that home game against, basically, if they get through the KC game on the road in first place, they're likely to hold on to it. Even if they're right, if they're neck and neck with KC at that point, the division should be theirs.
You think Case Keenum, they can overcome Case Keenum's body language?
I think
he's got great body language.
He's got great body language, apparently.
I think his shoulders will begin to slouch under the weight.
Not
at all.
I said this last week, and you guys scoffed at me when I said I love his body language. And
I didn't scoff. I celebrated.
Someone said this. It was very Tony Romo like. You know the way he could move.
A lot. I was hearing a lot of that watching Sunday night.
He was on that last night. He kept saying that.
Yeah, he got a lot of lofty comparisons, a lot of hyperbolic comparisons to Brett Favre.
He just knows what he's doing. Yeah.
He's played 42 minutes of NFL football, and now he's like, he's a hybrid. Brett Favre, Tony Romo-ish, but better looking. Better body language.
Better body language, at least.
Anyway, well, listen. Yeah, that's the other thing we have to keep
in mind. He reminds
me
of somebody, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
In the
Is
meantime,
it kind of a Mark Teixeira type thing working?
A little bit, yeah. I see what you're talking about.
Like if Mark Teixeira and Daniel Bryan had a kid.
I got a question for you guys.
Who's Daniel Bryan?
The WWE. Oh, he's a professional wrestler.
I don't know. Yeah,
right, they'll be like, oh, yeah.
I got a question for you guys. The NFC South, any chance there that the Panthers catch the Saints?
Well, you figure that the Cowboys are going to have to – not have to. There's still plenty of games left. I'd have to break out the schedule.
I'll tell you, I can do it for you. They play the Cowboys. They host the Cowboys this
week. I think that Superdome crowd, especially with a primetime home game, they really show up and deliver it.
Then they host the Niners.
The Saints have to play at Seattle at some point,
I'll get there. Where's that
Saints game?
They play the 49ers at the Superdome again. So back-to-back home games. Okay. Cowboys, 49ers. Then they go at the Falcons, which, look, putting aside their record, those type of teams, you know, when you're in the division and it's a division rival, you tend to – they'll play up a little bit more than they have done.
If Roddy White's right, then maybe. Then at the Seahawks,
so they have to go all the way across the country to Seattle. That's a tough one.
Then they
play the Panthers. And they've got two games against the Panthers, sandwiched with the Rams in the middle. Let's say they overcome the Rams. But two games against the Panthers, the first one at the Superdome, the second one in Carolina, and then they finish off with a Buccaneers team that could very well be looking to avoid going 0-16.
And how about the Panthers? Do they have any of those
Carolinas
ones that they'll definitely be
Carolina,
expected to lose?
At the 49ers this week. Then they've got to go on the road to the Patriots. Then they've got a tough one at the Dolphins. They play the Buccaneers at the Saints. They host the Jets, they host the Saints, and then at the Atlanta Falcons to finish the season. Hmm.
So about even. About
they're the sixth seed right now. If the season ended today, yes, I know it doesn't. Thank you, Dave. But if it were to, they would be the sixth seed in the NFC. You got the Lions, who we all think are on the up. Probably the Bears, who are not competing so much, trailing behind as well. And then the Cardinals and Eagles, who I think we can write off as a wild card. Maybe they win the NFC East, but as a wild card team, I'm not sure they're going to be.
Who would be in the playoffs if they were to start today? The Jets.
The New York Jets would be the AFC's sixth seed team.
Is that legitimate? Can they?
Well, all the teams in that mix, just before you walked in, I said I wouldn't be surprised to see the Ravens. It all depends on them beating the Bengals this coming week. But if they do, I still could see them jumping. Because everybody who is in that 4-4, 5-4, 4-5, 3-5, whatever mix is, mm-hmm. None of them are obviously world beaters. I could say it's a remarkable deed, though. Kudos. It also makes me – the one thing I was thinking about is, especially at a time when people are saying in Pittsburgh, fire Mike Tomlin and, massive overhaul, people really are making that kind of noise. And I've said, I think if the Cowboys finish 8-8, that should be enough for Jason Garrett to go. And Tom Coughlin, a lot of people are saying he's going to be pushed out at the end of this year if things continue. And so on and so forth. Isn't the takeaway message with Rex Ryan, once again, doesn't it prove the old thing about just stick with these guys? I guess Andy Reid – oh, and that's another one. Andy Reid is now 9-0. Maybe his message had gotten a little stale in Philly. But
there's so much turnover. Can you really say that?
I think you just stay with a coach, right? Don't you just – you say no. You don't just – I mean, I feel like, again – That the Rex Ryan thing, if it had been up to me, I would have fired him in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you look at him, would they have been better off now? No. I mean, and maybe the GM, maybe Idzik would look good and say, see, good thing we turned the page because now we're 5-4 and we're in a playoff spot after week 9. But, Rex Ryan now has him at 5-4. Isn't it just best, instead of this constant turnover of coaches, this constant reboot, which then comes with it the requisite, well, you have to let me bring in my own quarterback, though, and you have to give me at least 2 or 3 years, even in the sped-up cycle of things these days. You have to give everybody their chance to coach up their guy and do it their way. It's a constant reboot. Isn't that the lesson, Handsome?
I think it is, and I think the other part to it, and I think when DJ was on the podcast maybe last week, a couple of weeks ago, I don't see who the candidates are. Like, whilst it's a golden era for quarterbacks at the moment in the NFL, I don't see, like, coaching candidates bursting out of the ranks at the moment where you're like, that's the guy that we've got to get. You know, he's a hot young coaching candidate. Hmm. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't know who those guys are right now.
Ken Whisenhunt has probably worked himself into another head coaching gig because of what?
I mean, how dull is that? If your team fires their head coach and you're like, we're all in, we're going to get our guy, and the hottest name you could hire is Ken Whisenhunt. How do you feel about that hire?
Oh, I'm excited.
Really?
I like that move.
You don't sound excited, so I can't tell you.
He took the Cardinals to the Super Bowl, which to me is like taking. It's like taking three. That's like taking a normal team to three Super Bowls. You got to account for what he did. Even I understand with Kurt Warner there, but
figure out you need to get some hard and fast scoring rules. For this sort of thing.
Degrees,
like, that one counts four.
Yeah.
That win doesn't count. It only counts a half because it came against the Jaguars. So that kind of thing. Yeah.
Like Girardi, like, isn't really that great of a manager because he's won one World Series with the Yankees. You should win one pretty much every other year.
Yeah, that's
right. To be considered a good manager. Otherwise, you're just spinning your wheels.
All right. Thanks to Daniel Jeremiah. Thanks to Black Tie. Thanks to Handsome Hank. And thanks to you, Rank. We'll see at least a couple of you for the upcoming weekend guide. When's that going to go up this week, Handsome? Friday?
It depends when you've done it.
Well, we'll do it on Thursday. We'd love for you to stop by and say hello.
Maybe I will.
All right, now I'm going to go do the Shame Report Sheck Report. Be on the lookout for that. That'll be up there for you. We got the weekend guide, Ranks, likes and dislikes. Anything else, Handsome, on the NFL.com to promote?
There's Elliot Harrison, who's a fellow stalwart of this podcast. We'll be doing some power ranking tomorrow. I think you can look forward to his picks later in the week as well. We've got a ton of great content. Just come by, see what's there, and we'll be following
the
Incognito story.
Is it
all the way through to the end?
All right, listen. We'll be back with more Huey and Applesauce later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.